Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network.
And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Blog Talk Radio.
We'll go back in time. The seasons pass. The 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score which would bring victory. 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight, we'll explore the world of gridiron great. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football History and its Memorabilia. Gridiron Greats Publishing and Broadcasting Network. In conjunction with Swick Enterprises. And we're live. Southport, North Carolina, home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine. I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America that focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia. You can find us on the web at GridironGreatsMagazine.com. At this time, I'd like to introduce my co-host, the senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian, specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Largent. He hails Portland, Oregon. This is Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show this evening.
Bob, so good to be back. I'm still getting used to, not hearing Wallingford, Connecticut. But, I'll get used to it. It's still got to be weird for you. I mean, a decade of saying Wallingford.
Well, I'm becoming much more comfortable in my new setup here going through my collection, spending at least 2 to 3 hours a day on it. So many memories just come pouring back, going through stuff, resorting stuff, putting stuff on shelves and the like. And some amazing stuff I have. I forgot about some stuff, so nice seeing some stuff with a lot of memories on it, and just great. It's great. I do not miss in any way, shape, or form. I will be very blunt. The weather of New England at this time. Even though I got a little cool here, I have no problem with not worrying about snow anymore, tornadoes, microbursts. Yeah, the hurricanes I can deal with. We had a few of those in Connecticut anyways, but it's sunny and warm, and I really like it. I really feel good.
I think you're getting an opportunity. You're getting an opportunity to do something a lot of us don't, which is to go through our collection. You're doing it a couple times. You did it once, packing up, deciding what was worth sending, and sending out little care packages, one of which I was the recipient of. And then when you're there, you're unpacking, and you're also filtering through again. You're getting to go through your amazing collection twice, and do what a lot of us don't get a chance to do. Enjoy it. Simply sit there and enjoy it.
Well, that's the way I look at it. That's the way I feel about it. And I'm being selfish about it because I am enjoying it. I do have the time, being semi-retired now. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think packing it up was very stressful for me, because I did get rid of probably well over 600 publications and books, programs, things of that nature. I did get rid of the rest of my hockey cards I had, believe it or not, which I gave to my nephew to sell or disperse, whatever he wanted to do with it. And a couple other things that I had, mementos I gave to my nephew also to keep him, you know, if he wanted to hand it down to his son, my great-nephew, whatever. It was his call on it, so on and so forth. So it was bittersweet packing it up. And then not seeing it for 5.5 months really was stressful because, again, we did not move into the house until the end of January, the first day of February. So I didn't see anything for 5.5 months. And, you know, the only thing that, you know, looking at stuff on VFC, looking at stuff online, and then actually physically buying some packs, which Brenda said at the end, why don't you just buy a few packs of cards and open them up and you know, just get back to the swing a little. And I did, but it just wasn't exciting for me because, you know, I couldn't even keep track of all the different inserts in the packs or whatever. So actually when I go through it now the second time, it is enjoyable. And I still have stuff to go, still have stuff deciding to keep in the collection, the run, or get rid of, so on and so forth. And I still have a lot of my inventory that I took from Connecticut to sell. And, you know, I'm still doing that at the same time. Tonight, we're going to have, or actually this afternoon, we're going to have an open forum show, which basically has been developed by my illustrious co-host here, Joe. We're going to be looking at a bunch of different things. And the first thing we're going to look at is, I'm assuming, and I really haven't read a lot, and fill me in if I'm wrong, but a lot of, or some items from the Glenn Christensen Green Bay Packer collection is currently in a heritage auction. Do you know any more about it, Joe, than I do, or what's going on here?
Yeah, you're spot on. A friend of the show, past super collector, Gridiron Greats, guest, you know, of the podcast, Glenn Christensen. There are fans and then there are fanaticals, you know, that put the fan in fanatical. Glenn is, one of the premier Green Bay Packer fans and collectors that we've bumped into. I mean, his super collector issue was Green Bay Packer pornography being in his, you know, in his hobby room. And it had to be enjoyable / jealousy for you to be going through all that, you know. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, between you and me and our guests, I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, what is he as a Packer collector, and what would you rate yourself, Bob?
Well, trying to comprehend everything he had is just impossible for me. I still have the catalog he had, looking at it. It was funny, I pulled it out today when I was posting the stuff on the Packer yearbook, so I glanced through it again. And then when you sent me this, and I started looking at the auction, I'm wondering two things. A, I wondered if he's just paring down what he's actually going to keep and collect, which I'm assuming is what's going on. And B, or is he just going to have a really focused theme to his collection, and try to just keep things more manageable at the same time? I can't personally handle collecting everything there possibly could be for the Packers. I just couldn't do it. I like having certain type items. I like having anything that has Bart Starr on it. That's what I basically look at. You know, the media guide run, the yearbook run, that's fun. And it doesn't take up that much space, even though it does take up space. But at the same time, you're still examining the history of the team type of thing. You know what I mean? But there's so much eye candy here. It's just incredible to look at the stuff that he has. It's just amazing. And I still haven't really looked at it completely. I've still been going through it at the same time. the one thing that what I would focus on in his things he has for auction is looking at the Bart Starr stuff and see if there's anything there that I could really, you know, would really fit in or I would want to use for my collection of Bart Starr stuff, which I'm definitely expanding while I'm down here and narrowing my other stuff at the same time. So,
well,
it is phenomenal. Totally phenomenal.
As luck would have it, there is a where was I? I just had it, and I clicked on it and lost. Here it is. Lot number 44. And this is the Heritage Auction that opens in a week on October 27th. But the viewing is available right now. You can go in and watch items or track them. The lot number 44404, that's four fours, is a Type 1 photo of Bart Starr receiving the Player of the Year Award in 1967. And it's Bart holding his, and a really nice lithograph. I don't know who the gentleman handing him thing is, but pretty damn cool. Handsome man, prime of his career. And what really starts this auction off is a picture of Lambo. It's a Type 1 photo of Lambo from like 1961. And while you were talking, I was like, man, it's hard to believe the guy was, you know, died, you know, less than 20 years later, just, you know, on the scene, amazing coach, changed the way things were, won a couple Super Bowls, you know, and then moved on. I just, you know, I doubt most people know he moved on to the Redskins for a little while. But pretty amazing here, but, you know, a Bart Starr photo. And then the lot before that, 44403, is a Type 1 photo of Bart Starr in a game throwing a pass. Funny you mentioned Bart Starr. There he is. But pretty amazing. I don't know how much of this is from Glenn Christensen. Heritage has done a really good job of listing the stuff that's from the Glenn Christensen, collection just for the provenance of it. So I would imagine if it's not, you know, if it's not listed as Glenn's collection, it's not, because that, obviously the provenance of that is, you know, is pretty good if it came from his. Footballs, signed autographed footballs from his collection. Let me jump into the category here because I clicked on that link. So autographed team footballs from the Packers, rings. There's a 1967 Super Bowl I Packers ring. The salesman sample, but it is still an authentic ring, and they listed it as from the Glenn Christensen collection. I mean, a Super Bowl one, the first Super Bowl, the big one, the big game, and a ring. If you sit back and think about what would be the holy grail of Green Bay Packer collection, is that it? I mean, is that one of the things?
Well, I think the holy grail would be, which we would never see, is Vince Lombardi's Super Bowl rings, number one.
Oh, man.
And then number two is to see something of Curly Lambeau from one of his championships. And I think the Lombardi rings would be just an incredible type of, you know, and it would be a once-in-a-lifetime deal. I'm sure it's not for sale. I'm sure it would be in a museum or whatever type of thing. And for me, my holy grail would be, and I'm toying around with the idea of doing it, but I know it's going to be tough, is to put together a run of ticket stubs and programs from all the games that Bart Starr played in with the Packers. Not coached, but just played in. And I think that would be pretty cool. One of my projects down here is to actually match how many programs I have from that era, which is not a lot. If I have 20, that's probably a lot. and maybe a matching 20 ticket stubs, but not necessarily from those programs. And it would be a challenge. It would be a lot of bucks put out because, again, you got to find Super Bowl one and two ticket stubs, which are pricey. And, his early, the 1959 season ticket stubs and programs are not plentiful out there, to say the least. So, looking at 59 to what, 71, it would definitely be a challenge, to say the least. So, and I would not do, not the ones he just started, I would do all of them that he was actually a Packer on the roster, whether he played or not. Because there were games in the 60s he was injured and he didn't play, type of thing. But I think that would be a very cool, collectible. I mean, I know people have done Elway, people have done Favre, people are doing Rodgers right now, and that's pretty much a moot point now since all ticket stubs are on the phone now, so there's no physical tickets. So I know some collectors are actually printing those out and either selling them or just keeping them for themselves, so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's not the same. We've talked about how that's kind of the end of the year, but there's also in this an authentic, it's not in the Glenn Christensen collection, but there's an authentic Super Bowl ring from player offensive guard Frederick Fuzzy Thurston, 1967 authentic Super Bowl ring, and the estimate is 100,000 plus. Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
World champion and the Packers 1966 on the top. A single diamond on the sign is on the side is his last name, his number, and 1961, 62, 65, and 66 on a Green Bay helmet, which, you know, notes the championships plus the first big one, Super Bowl. And then on the other side is, you know, Green Bay 24, Dallas 27, Green Bay 35, Kansas City. It runs off. And then the, you know, three core values that Lombardi had, harmony, courage, and valor. What an impressive ring. What a historical ring. Just
amazing,
impressive.
Amazing stuff. And the other thing, another tough holy grail for me would be an actual game-used Bert Starr helmet. And that would be tricky.
Oh.
Trying to get the province on it, because again, well, my, you know, Joe Schmo gave it to my, uncle 45 years ago after the game, type of thing. Well, yeah, you have no idea. I mean, you really gotta have some, you know, specific stuff to actually make it seem that it is real, so on and so forth. So that's another holy grail that I doubt seriously I'll ever. To say the least, but there's some incredible stuff in there. But I also see there's thing there from a guy that you collect. That's Mr. Larger, and I looked this out briefly. And what are your thoughts? Describe it first, and you are the expert on them. So what is the significance of that piece?
Well, it is a game used and worn Seattle Seahawks Steve Largent jersey. It's also got an autograph. The autograph's pretty faint, so which is kind of interesting. But I love their write-up. 14-year career with the Seahawks, elite, prolific, clutch receiver, football history. When he retired in 1989, he held every major NFL receiving mark. Career receptions, 819. Receiving yards, 13,089. Receiving touchdowns, 100, which he broke Don Hudson's record. And consecutive games with a catch, number 177, which he broke Harold Carmichael's record. And I'm looking, in my office, I'm looking, and to the left of my desk, I have a Hall of Fame catch, which is when he broke the streak. In it. I mean, and obviously that's the game, but they just say it's a game used jersey. And they also say we know it's a game used, but we don't know which game. So there's a provenance issue. It's just like you just said a minute ago, the Holy Grail would be a game used Bart Starr helmet. But I mean, Joe Schmo had this. I mean, how do you know? How do you connect provenance? You know, of a you know of how do you
right,
prove it
right.
Unless hair on it or a scuff or you know some stain. And Todd Tobias is going through the same issue right now where he found a game used Lance Allworth jersey, and he's 99% sure. But if you stroke a big check for a game used jersey like that, you kind of want it to be 100%. He knows Lance Allworth. I mean, he took it to Lance. He has a picture of Lance Allworth holding this game used jersey he bought. You know, but this is 55 years ago. Lance is like, I don't know. I mean, at this point, Todd knows more about game used, you know, Lance Allworth jerseys than Lance does. So that's just it. Here's this game used 1989 last year he played, and it comes with an LOA. But you know, we've seen those go bad.
Right.
So,
right.
Love it.
I'm curious. Do you have any game used stuff from larger, like helmets or balls or anything like that?
I mean, I joke around and say a jockstrap, but you know, no, I don't have anything game used. It's not really what I collect. I will go after this jersey. I will go after this jersey because it is, you know, they say it comes with an LOA. I mean, at some point, I won't. Just because it doesn't fit my collection, but I don't know. I don't have a lot of game used stuff. It's just not really what I collect. You know what I mean? It's kind of like you said. You can't collect everything that has to do with the Packers,
right?
And I'm the same.
I don't have anything game used in my collection. I'll be honest with you. I mean, you know, the closest game used thing I got is the ticket stuff in the program from the game. That's it. You know, I don't have any footballs that were used. The only thing I have is that white, which I still say is probably a early 50s NFL football. I don't know if it's game used or not, and I really can't figure it out one way or the other. And I still say in my own mind it was probably just a store model that really got a lot of use. And then I've had people look at it and say, geez, you know, this could actually be an early NFL game where they use white balls so they could see the ball better type of thing. And again, that was a tag sale deal I got. I found it at a tag sale. Guy had no clue what it was. I bought it from him. I didn't spend a lot of money for him. It's not in the greatest shape either. But I was saying to myself, I really wonder if this was game used or not. And that's probably the closest thing I own to actually saying that it was game used or not type of thing. But I do agree with it. You cannot collect everything out there. You got to have your own focus one way or the other. I mean, you know, looking at my stuff now and looking at all the different things that I accumulated as compared to collected, I understood some of the stuff I did as far as the accumulation is concerned, because I always said at this age, and I'm talking about 30 years ago when I was collecting this stuff, I said, when I'm retired, I'm going to start selling off a lot of this stuff. And it's going to be 30 years older, and it should be worth something. You know what I mean? But who would know that 1990 Pro Set basically is worthless 32 years later? I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. You know, and I didn't go crazy with it either. But there's certain things in my collection are obviously worth more than a lot of worthless things I have in my collection and or accumulation and or inventory at the same time. And I'm still blown away to this day about how little interest there is for publications. I still don't get it. I just don't understand it. Paper items and publications. I just don't get why they are looked down upon. They're not overly valuable. I just don't understand. I really don't. And back it up a bit, I did do a show last Saturday in Columbia, South Carolina, and I saw a very, very similar thing I saw at the National. Younger fellows with their backpacks and their little carrying cases go and take the table and ask them if I want to buy or I want to trade, and it's basically 90% of basketball. And I have no interest in it whatsoever. And one guy who was doing it, he started picking up a lot of the the actual pieces of football items I had, and he started asking me a lot of questions. And I said to him straight up, that's the stuff you really should be collecting. And he was floored that I said that to him. And he said, well, he was like, he didn't know what to say. And I said, you're going around trying to sell what everybody else has. Think about it. Just because it's a PSA 10 or it's a graded 10 or whatever, what makes that so valuable for a player who might get injured this season and never play again type of thing?
Yeah.
So you throw the doubt in them. Maybe a couple of collectors, young guys, say, hey, this older stuff is being given away. I think I should start picking it up as fast as possible. It was the same thing with publication. I was talking to one guy there, and he said the same thing I said. He was very shocked how little interest there are in publications. And, you know, you can argue, yeah, they take up space, blah, blah, blah. But you don't need to have 5,000 publications in your collection. You can have a couple hundred nice publications, media guides, yearbooks, programs, whatever. And you got something very historical there. You know what I mean? It's truly amazing. Truly amazing. Half of one of my tables was completely filled with publications. I sold two publications the entire day. And that was it. It was just shocking to me. And it was one guy was actually, he was shocked because I was the only one that had publications in the show. And he said, geez, I collect Sports Illustrated. They should have brought my wireless. And he says, I never see publications at this show. I said, well, now you do. So he's the only guy that bought two publications from me. It's truly amazing. Truly amazing. This in the auction also, there's an incredible Type 1 photo of Jim Thorpe. What's your take on that?
Yep, we're probably making, you know, Jeff angry that we're outing this, but you know, hey, to me, everyone's going to check heritage, but there's a 1922 Orang Indian Type 1 photo with Jim Thorpe, and it's got some writing on it. Somebody points out Thorpe, but just back row, dead center, Jim Thorpe, you know, wearing an Orang Indian, you know, jersey. You know, obviously, 22, Thorpe was, as weird as it sounds, you win the gold medal in a, you know, pentathlon and decathlon in 1912, and 10 years later you're playing on a, you know, on a, you know, basically a, you know, a show team, you know, obviously right before he became president of the NFL, but just an incredible Type 1 photo of, you know, a little later in life, Jim Thorpe. It's incredible. I mean, I've said it 100 times. I love auctions, and I love being through auctions and seeing what's coming. REA just popped, and for the first time ever, you know how sometimes baseball obviously is the darling, and then a lot of times auctions like REA have you know, football, basketball, and hockey lumped into one category. Mm-hmm. You know, we're at the children's table. For the first time ever, you know, REA, all three of those, basketball, football, hockey, lumped together. For the first time ever, basketball led that category, because usually whoever has the most auction items leads the category, and it's usually football. This is the first time I've ever opened that category up, and it was 3 pages of basketball stuff, all modern, shiny stuff like you were talking about, and then they got into the football. And I was like, man, that basketball really took things by storm, didn't it?
Yep. Yep. I mean, it's just, it was a replay of the National. I'm seeing, yeah. And Brenda was with me, and I'm saying, this is what I saw at the National the entire day. And being set up with Josh Adams there, and he did a lot of basketball there. I mean, he had like 4 or 5 guys deep with their backpacks and their cases, looking at his stuff, buying stuff, trading, selling. So, I mean, I'm like, my mouth was open for the whole thing. I was blown away by the whole thing, and I started seeing it again at this show. I mean, a relatively small show, and you got the same exact thing happening, and it's just amazing to me, truly amazing. And I had two guys ask me, and again, you know, Neanderthal man behind the table here, what do you have in
I forgot the basketball player, and I said, I'm sorry, I have no basketball whatsoever. So one guy just thanked me and walked away, and then the second guy is explaining to me how hot basketball is, and I said, I really don't watch it. I really never collected it, and I really have no interest in it. But I said, you know, I'm sure there's somebody here that might have something you're looking for. And sure enough, there were several young guys selling graded basketball, and that was it. So, true, it just blows my mind. Blows my mind. And again, put it in perspective. Put it in perspective. Here's this team photo that's 100 years old of one of the most iconic athletes in the history of sport. At the original time frame of when the NFL started, in a team that no longer exists. The rarity of that particular photo is incredible. But you'd rather buy a PSA basketball card for $15,000 instead. And just look at the perspective of this. Think of the parallel. This is what I can't comprehend in any way, shape, or form. I really can't. There's one other thing from the auctions, and I did look at it. It's a ticket stub or a ticket from a Raiders-Bengals game on January 13th, 1991, and that was the game that Bo Jackson ended his football career because he got severely injured there.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a historical ticket. I don't care what anybody says. Bo Jackson was an excellent football player the few seasons that he played.
Absolutely.
And to me, I'm very surprised more collectors, with the exception of the some Raider collectors I know, are not more proactive trying to collect every ticket stub and program Bo Jackson played in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
this is obviously the game where he's running down the sideline and a Bengal player tackles him from behind. And Bo is one of the most powerful runners you'll see. And he was, you know, running so hard that when somebody grabbed his leg, he blew his hip out. I mean, like blew his hip out, had to have a hip replacement. January 13th, 1991, like you mentioned. And I noted it. And I was, you know, and then, it, you know, when we were, you know, going back and forth, I'm like, is this kind of macabre or is this a historically significant game? And rhetorical question to me, because I mentioned to you when we were going back and forth that me, one of the holy grail tickets for Red Grange's career would be the game that, you know, he blew his knee out in, which I acquired about 4 years ago, you know, October 16th, 1927, Chicago Bears versus the New York Yankees, Red Grange. Red Grange left the Bears in 25 and went to the Yankees. And so they're having a game and, again, running down the sidelines, and an old teammate on the Bears tackles him and pop blows his knee out, you know, tore his tendons. They didn't have the ability to fix tendons, knee blowouts back then. So he took the rest of the season off and came back, took the rest of the season and the next year off in 1929. I mean, the New York Yankees folded, the AFL folded, the Yankees League folded, all because Grange was the draw. But I really sought out that ticket, and I finally found, talk about a rare ticket, but the unicorn of it is an unused ticket, and I found a slabbed unused ticket from that game. And it's one of my favorite things in my collection. But it basically marks the end of Grange's flashy career. He was still a name drop when he came back to the Bears in, 29, but he was more of a name draw. He switched over to defense because he wasn't fast enough to be on offense. Nagurski took over the running for the Bears. But to me, this is the end of an era. You know, it bookends Grange's career.
Yep.
And I never thought about it as being, macabre, as being a weird thing until I saw that Bo Jackson ticket. I'm like, oh, that's kind of strange. Somebody would collect that. And then I'm like, oh, wait a minute, I collect that. So
Yeah, I don't think, to me, I think it's a very collectible ticket. I think it's going to, I actually think people are going to be surprised to see where it ends up at. You know, I can envision it being, possibly a $500 to $1,000 ticket. You never know. So, you know, if somebody's a true Bo Jackson collector,
yep.
And like I said, he was a good football player, and can imagine what he could have done if he stayed healthy and he continued to play in two sports. Would have been pretty cool. I mean, it's a very interesting. It'll be very interesting to see where that ticket actually ends up at, and how many more tickets may come to the market from people saying, "Hey, I was at that game. That was a season ticket holder or whatever, and I want to get rid of it. I didn't realize it was worth that much," so on and so forth. So, other thing, I just to make a real quick comment about ticket stubs here. If when you see something advertised, especially on eBay, for ticket stubs, I know a lot of professional collectors or dealers in tickets will research what the game is. And if they see it's a sleeper that whoever had it,
yep.
You know, it was their Uncle Joe's ticket stub and caught in a cigar box type of thing. And I realized that it was, a major game between, the Cowboys and the Packers back in 1967 type of thing or whatever it is. You know, there's a lot of historical significance to the ticket stub. That's what it comes down to, So, people need to do their research. Collectors, I know, do already. But people who are selling stuff should also realize that, there is some very rare items you may be going over, and they have historical significance to them, and they are worth much more money than you can anticipate at the same time.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely right.
It's fascinating to me. And again, I took it naturally back, from the first few games I ever attended in any sport, I would keep the ticket stub because I said, that was my admission to the game. And, I had no vision that, in 2022, I'm going to start selling this ticket stub from a game I went in 1968 or whatever. But, I just thought it was a nice collectible. And I always liked the program because back then programs were real and they had a lot of information on them. And, they had a lot of nice photos. They were well-written articles, so on and so forth. So it was pretty cool to actually collect it. So it's interesting.
Yeah,
last 20 minutes or so of the show today, we're going to get into our next set. We've gone through the Bowmans. We talked about the Bowmans, and we're going to start today with our tops, and we're going to start in 1955 with the one of the greatest classical vintage football card sets there is. I've always loved this set. 1955 Topps All-American 100-card set. I had the pleasure on the show, talking to an older dealer there who had and broke up a 55 Topps All-American set in mixed condition. Mm. And he was commenting too, like I said, he loved the set. He always enjoyed it, blah, blah, blah. And we also did comment how a younger person really is not educated on that set, so they're going to just pass it by type of thing. But in any event, you and I both, did you collect it and then sell it, or you just got a few cards left in the set? Because I still have my set, my original set.
Yeah, collected it, sold it. I have this in all PSA 8.
With the exception
of a couple of Hall of Fame rookie cards. It was one of the first sets I completed when I was trying to do my run, and loved it. I mean, it's kind of lost as you start to get into into football history. You realize some of these rookie cards are well past it, and as you mentioned, this is Topps's attempt to get back into the professional football. Bowman's stranglehold on the NFL was the contract was ending in 55, and Bowman or in Topps figured they would put together a set, if to do anything, to give people a choice at the cash register. You know, Topps All-American with, you know, stars that you know, Don Hudson, you know, Red Grange, et cetera, or 55 Bowman that, as we both mentioned, the quality, you know, of the Bowman set started to slide a little bit. Not to mention the 55 Bowman pack was kind of bland and ugly, brown and green.
Mm-hmm.
So this was really Topps' attempt to split the revenue, you know, of the, you know, almighty, you know, collector with Bowman to strangle them off to make it so they didn't have enough money to renew the NFL contract. And obviously Bowman went away in 55 Bowman was their last set, and Topps took over in 56. But so the 55 set to me is the, you know, was Topps' attempt to nudge somebody off the playing field. As you said, 100-card set. It came in cello or 5-cent packs. And what was it, about 6, 8, 10 months ago, a nickel pack, a 55 Topps All-American nickel pack, wax pack, came up for sale. I think it was in Heritage. And we have a text thread with a bunch of us collectors. I'm like, gentlemen, this is a wax collector's holy grail. I'm recycling cans. I'm shaking the seat cushions. I'm going after this wax pack. And I want to say at about $30,000, I'm like, yep, I can't do that, guys. It ended up going for $60,000 was this nickel pack.
Yep.
Pretty incredible. But what was it, about 15 years ago also, there was a collector in California whose uncle worked for Topps, and he found a case of cello in the closet somewhere. And the population of the and the cellos were an immaculate collection, and opened up a bunch of cellos, and for the first time ever, PSA 10 cards started appearing on the registry. And let me look at this. It's probably still there. I happen to be on the registry, ABS. But where is it? Entire finest list. Who was it? What was the guy's name? I forget his name. He came in, he found the cellos, and, you know, became the number one Topps, you know, 55 Topps set, you know, with a over a 9 grade. Must be ABS.
Okay.
Must have changed. But and then went away. Some really good names in here. I rattled them off for you. You know, Bill Dudley, Otto Graham, Newt Rockne, Sammy Baugh, Ken Strong, Red Grange. You know, Red Grange had been out of the NFL for 20 years. He retired in 1935, and, you know, he's on a card.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously, you know, going for flash, going for name recognition. Where is it? You know, Jim Thorpe was a huge draw. Four Horsemen was a huge one. And Sid Luckman.
Lou Jack,
yeah, exactly. There's
I'm looking as you're talking. I'm looking at my own 55 set right now. I pulled it out of the binder, and I got some nice cards in the set, and I got some real nasty cards in the set. And it's interesting. I do remember, but the last card I needed for the set was the Four Horsemen. And I was at a show, and fellow dealer who I knew back then, this was in the 90s, he said, well, I got a corner crease one, and I'm looking at it right now, seeing if you're looking at the bottom right-hand corner of the card about an inch up, it's like a series of four creases over. It's almost like it was bent, but it didn't really come through the back of the card that bad. And I remember he said, I'll take $25 for it. So I said, okay, I'll buy it from you. And at that time, it wasn't the explosion, you know, that we saw as the years progressed. But I got a good deal on it. I'm happy with it. But there's a couple cards I really need now to upgrade. I didn't. My Cinquich card number 69 is a definite beater. I haven't looked at this for a while, but I got to make a list of upgrades on this. To at least get it in VG type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, but, Red Grange is listed as an Illinois player there, and it's, you know, it's college. It's All-American. It's, you know, that's the name of it is Topps All-American. These were college players who were All-American. You know, Jim Thorpe Carlisle, you know, here I'm looking at the Don Hudson one. He's Alabama. The Four Horsemen are Notre Dame. You know, so, it's, you know, it, absolute name recognition. College was the name of the game. You know, back, you know, until the early 30s, and I would imagine it was even popular in 55. So, but it was absolute death knell. I have yet to see an uncut sheet of how these were, but with a 100 card set, you can fit that on a 132 card, you know, card sheet and have some, you know, some double prints. And the way the population of this is, you know, I would dare to guess, you know, the from 75 on is where you start to see, you know, some, some short prints, or I guess one through 75 would be the who knows, maybe they had varying sheets, but you've got, you know, with 100 cards, you have 32 extras. So maybe they, ran them around. I don't know, but you've got some overlap there. But, you know, pretty populous. I mean, you know, card number 89, Marshall Goldberg, has 153 pop in PSA 8. You know, for a, you know, for, you know, 75-year-old card, you know, or 65-year-old card, excuse me. That's a hell of a lot of population. You know, that's pretty high pop. You know,
right. So I think I always said the All Americans to me are relatively that difficult of a set to put together. Obviously, if you want it in you know, pristine condition, it's going to be much more difficult. But at the same time, it's really not, you know, if you want lesser condition, there's plenty of them out there. But with the exception of the Four Horsemen, which is the real money card right now of the whole set. So, but it's really a nice historic. Again, here's another example, a nice historical vintage set. That one $15,000 card you're buying PSA graded basketball player, you can have a historical collection of 55 All American players with it. And it's amazing to me. It's just truly amazing. But it's a good set. It's a good set to collect. It's still collectible. You can still find it at shows. And I do remember, it's interesting, too, well, thinking back at the National, the few tables I did get to look at stuff, one dealer did have some 55 All-American Commons. They were very reasonably priced, I will add, at the same time. So it's, you know, they're there. They're out there.
I'm on Near Mint Mike's website. Sometimes he will... sometimes he will have what an uncut sheet will look like, and even he doesn't have it. So you've got a nice picture of what the box looked like, which we've seen. And as I mentioned, you know, a wax pack came up for sale. The cellos, you know, what the gentleman found in the closet of his uncle worked for Topps were the cellos. So you know, so it's we've you know, at this point we've seen the cellos. Those are incredibly valuable. But the wax packs. Oh, here it is. Yeah, never mind. I did find it. He goes, a partial uncut sheet appeared in the online auction. I didn't realize that. So he guesses 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 by 20. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. He guesses they were 5 by 10 sheets, and two sheets. Let's see here. Numbered cards, 34 short prints. Okay, so he's guessing what we did. 34 short prints and 33 of them, which colored green, appear on this partial sheet. Okay, price tags are incorrect.
All right, so then if it's 34 short prints, there would be 64. It's a sheet of 64 of them.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, excuse me, the partial sheet that he found had 50 cards on it. So he's guessing it was a full sheet.
Okay.
32 short prints.
32.
Man, Mike.
Okay.
Mike. Mike reminds me a lot of you. He just does a lot. He does the good, the heavy lifting of the hobby. There's a lot of people like that who just spend so much time in the hobby just doing amazing things. And building an uncut sheet like this is so thankless. Tracking this stuff, it's amazing, but it's such an invaluable resource. So
most definitely.
Yeah.
And the other thing too for me, going back to mentioning wrappers, all the different variation on the wrappers over the years, to the obscurity of the back of the wrapper where Topps had giveaways, send a diamond. Some of the wrappers you're seeing, you know, 4 and 5, 6 different varieties in the back. And to try to collect those back varieties is very, very difficult, to say the least. And I never did it. You know, my wrapper collection that I did collect and end up selling, long story short, I was just happy to get one of them, and that was it. And then 10 years later, I realized there were different side panels to them, and I always knew there was a difference between a penny pack, nickel pack, fellow pack, so on and so forth. But I never realized the side panels were that different. And in some cases, especially in the late 60s, early 70s, they were definitely very different side panels for the wrappers. But, you know, some people will say, well, who cares about that? Well, it's part of the hobby. It's part of our collector. You know, so it's very interesting.
Yeah. Do you remember when I was texting the group about that 55 nickel pack?
Yeah, I do. I still have it on my phone. So.
Yeah. Yeah, at some point you're like, man, I have to tell my wife. If I spend this much money, I got to tell my wife. There's hobby money, and there's stuff that you're like, all right, I can sell this and afford that, but at some point you realize it is a little silly to have something like that. And, I mean, it's very rare. I want to say there's 3 of them. I went to check the pop, and there's like, or what was it? I think there's 5 of them graded by PSA in its entirety, and you know, no other company had graded any. So, I mean, it's definitely, you know, very few and far between. But I just, yeah, I mean, I love my wax back run. I'll just have to, you know, I'll just have to have that. There be a gap in that year.
Oh yeah, most definitely. But that is just classic. Classic. I would, you know, again, I was 10 years too late on that, but I would have loved to have seen if I was more recognizing of something like that in the late 60s or early 70s, walk into a candy shop and ask the proprietor, do you have any of last season's packs or, you know, prior season's packs? And just imagine some gentleman goes in the back room and he says, okay, you can have this whole box of 1957 Topps football for $1. I've had it here for years, type of thing. That has to have been an amazing, amazing find, but I'm sure it was prevalent back then. You know, if Topps didn't take it back and they couldn't get rid of it, you know, a lot of back then you saved stuff, you know. So truly amazing. Truly amazing what could be uncovered one way or the other. We got about 6 minutes left. Again, if you're not a subscriber to Gridiron Greats Magazine, what are you waiting for, and why are you waiting for? Check out our website, gridirongreatsmagazine.com. Our latest issue, the fall issue, is on press. It hopefully will be mailed out either Friday or Monday. And I'll keep everybody in suspense until that time. So they get it in the mail or they see it on the newsstands or on the website and order it then. So the 55 All-American set, truly a classic vintage set.
Yep.
I think just a great piece to have in your collection if you're collecting vintage football cards. I have no issues with people telling me I'm going to collect 1948 to 1972. You have every conceivable thing possible thrown at you in those years, short prints, condition, short cards that are just brutally difficult to find in any condition. It would be an amazing run. And again, I would have no problem with somebody telling me I'm collecting 1973 to 1988. for the simple reason it's easier to collect and it's going to be less expensive for me. And also, you got a great vintage run there too, because you got classic 1970s football and you got classic 1980s football. And you got a lot of great Hall of Famers and stars and all those stuff at the same time. And then, again, a lot of collectors, I can see, they sneak into that 1989 year because they want to collect the score and they want to collect the person. The Topps is completely nondescript, appreciated. It's not a great set, in my opinion, but, you know, it's a run. And then they call it quits once the explosion has occurred. And
yeah.
1990, the next basic 32-year run of football cards, is just the wild, wild west up there.
Yeah.
So many different cards, brands. I don't know how anybody can keep up with it. And the one thing I was checked reopening that I have is just that. An amazing 3,200 count box that's well beat up now that has mostly brand newer Green Bay Packer cards in it from roughly 1992. So roughly 2010. And I forgot all about that box of cards I had. And I say, wow, just going through this is a trip down memory lane. And I'm just trying to, I started remembering a few things of how I got a lot of those cards from a couple of buys I made and so on and so forth. But that's really tough to complete. And more, it's not a fun completion. You know what I'm saying? It's just not fun to try to collect 20,000 cards in 2 years. But
that's the
hobby.
Well,
it
was kind of funny during COVID. I mean, you were collecting wax packs, and you got me into it because the next thing you know, I went to Target and it was empty. I remember sending the group a picture. And so I ended up on Target.com, and I bought like four boxes of it, and pretty interesting. Just trying to collect for the sake of collecting, and choosing modern, because it's just what we got,
I bought one pack of, I think it's 2022 playoff cards, and I just opened it, and I just said, I think that's the first and only pack of 2022 I'll be opening this year. It did nothing for me, and it was just a hodgepodge, a total hodgepodge of inserts and everything else, and it was just ridiculous to open. It really was. I just laughed after I got them sorting the cards out. And we're down in 2 minutes. 2 minute warning. I'll hand off to you, Joe. Would you pick up on tonight's open floor?
Don't bid on that Steve Largent jersey. Hopefully that can go low enough where I can feel good about buying it and the provenance of it. And Jeff Payne, I'm sorry I outed a 1922 Oorang Jim Thorpe Type 1 photo. I apologize, brother. Trust me, I'll be right there in the trenches with you duking it out. I think you touched on it just a minute ago where it's like, if you want to collect 48 to 72, that's cool. If you want to collect 73 to 88, that's cool. Whatever you want to collect is great. We hear it time and time again from our guests, and I think Bob and I, say the same thing. It's collect what you love and make it enjoyable. It's a hobby, not a job. Obviously, nobody wants, what to buy to lose value or lose money or be fraudulent or fake, but, that's understanding the hobby. So collect what you love.
And with the last 30 seconds left of the show, my only comment is in my man cave here, I look at, and I'll send out a photo of it, the run, which is all on one bookcase and binders. And that's what represents my collection to a large degree. And I always tell people that's the last thing to go. I gotta sell everything. That's the last thing. It's just too good to sell. And I still love pulling out a binder and looking at everything. We're out of time. Thanks for listening. Hope we'll be back next week with another show. Until then, we'll be. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back. Take care.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.